Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Today, I am fortunate to be joined by my longtime friend, Pete Hogan. Pete is the Senior Vice President of Information Technology at Campana Pet Brands. Well, Pete Hogan, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I have been looking so forward to this time with you because you're just like, honestly, you're one of my favorite people.
Well, thank you so much. You're one of my favorite. And you know, we have such a long walk between each other, between our offices. It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, so for our listeners, Pete, his company and our company are in the same building. So we can just walk over and knock on each other's window. But, you know, we go way back. We go way back, Pete. We were talking about it. And Pete, in beginning in his career, he was a consultant. He consulted through Technology Partners in 2000 at AG Edwards. And so, I mean, we have had a long history and we've done so many fun things together, Pete, over the years, right?
Oh, it's been amazing. Yeah.
It really has. So
the sad part is you've dated me even before that because my career didn't even start then.
Yeah, but you like started your career when you were 12. So, you know,
That's true. You're still very, very young,
right? But you know, we're going to talk about this, but you've been at a lot of amazing companies in St. Louis, Citi, MasterCard, Brown Shoe, which is now Caleres. You consulted through us at AG Edwards. You've been at Vigeon, you've been at Post. You've done so much, Pete, but let me ask you, I know that most of it has been, you've been local to St. Louis. So, you know, how would you say, you know, and we have listeners that listen from all over the world, you know, and they may not know a lot about St. Louis. I mean, how do you feel like St. Louis has really helped shape you and your career?
It's really helped me form both a technology base that I could grow into a leadership role from. So, you know, early in the 90s, and I won't bore you with, you know, where I've been way back there, but it was more learning technology. So I started my career really learning operating systems. I worked for Silicon Graphics to start right out of college, and they were the folks that created Jurassic Park, the original. That was all the technology that built the dinosaurs and that movie production. So from there, I had some great tech skills that I was able to take to another company and learn some other operating systems and some networking skills. So I spent most of the 90s actually as a systems integrator. So really kind of being the bridge between folks that were siloed. So back then, it felt like people were really learning one technology and really mastering it. It wasn't like it is today where people go wider. And in those days, they needed someone that could come in and kind of bridge the gap between maybe the Unix and the NT and the networking folks and speak a common language. So that's what I grew into in probably my first 8 to 10 years of my career. And I guess it was great. I'm very thankful for that time. I really learned a lot about deep technologies across the board. And it really helped me later in life. Even today, there's still some of those skills I lean on, you know, when we have certain issues. That's how my mind, because it taught me troubleshooting. And that's a skill set that I can't tell you how many nights I was up troubleshooting some issues. There's a lot better redundancy in the cloud these days, but back then there wasn't. So it really helped form the basis of my tech skills. And then I moved into leadership roles right around early 2000s. really with MasterCard and I was at Citigroup for a little while, City Financial International. MasterCard was a great learning opportunity as a first leader because I got to work in a couple different departments over about an 8-year window and really learn not just the skill set I went there with, but also pick up leading other teams that I didn't necessarily have those same foundational skills in. So it taught me how do I lead folks, or how do I learn to lead folks who I don't necessarily understand everything they do. Mm-hmm. As a first-time leader and manager, that's kind of hard because you feel very out of, you're never comfortable. And even today, I'm still never comfortable, but you're really not comfortable when you're leading groups of folks that, you know only a little bit of what they do, and you have to learn their role too. Mm-hmm. And as we all grow in leadership, that's just how it evolves.
That's the way that it is, right? Because I'm sure, yes, I mean, Pete, I'm sure even there's things that today, right, that you have to lean on your team that are subject matter experts in certain areas. You know, I'm so glad that you brought that up because it takes a certain amount of vulnerability, I feel like, as a leader, and a humility about that leader to say, I don't have all the answers. I've got to lean on other people. So, you know, if you are an aspiring leader out there, and thinking, oh, I got to have all the answers. That's not reality. That's not reality. It's about working through other people. And Pete, I want to spend a lot of time on that because I think that is a place that you really do shine. But I'm glad that you brought that up.
I appreciate it. It is humbling, especially the first time you go through it. Once mm-hmm. you've been through it a while, it becomes easier like anything else. But I think the theme I saw in my career is really, well, maybe I'll just share a little bit more on the career journey and then switch back to this. But later in my career, I had some great opportunities to work also at Caleres. And really, that gave me a lot of experience on the e-commerce side of the house and really understanding how do we sell to customers and how do we rapidly innovate? At MasterCard, you had to get it right. I mean, MasterCard's transactional base and really those systems, that they have to be solid, secure, and you really have to control change incredibly tightly. Where on the e-commerce side, it kind of swings the other way a bit where you're willing to take more risk and chances if there's a reward mm-hmm. that's worth it. So it really helped me balance out my perspective on how do I approach technical problems and how do we help solve those for the business. Mm-hmm. Then I spent about 10 years at Post Holdings, and that was probably I owe a lot of people for a lot of growth there. I really learned how to work it started out as more of a centralized company when we spun out from Royal Corp and we were just Post Foods, effectively. One holdings company with one operating division, Post Foods reported to Post Holdings. Then over the course of the next 10 years, there were in excess of, 16 acquisitions. The company Yes. grew from, about $800 million to over $6 billion, and it was a phenomenal journey. I mean, it's part of how do you handle change? And there was, I think, 1 year where we bought 5 or 6 companies. So, and how do you integrate when you're never going to catch up right away? Like you can't integrate that many systems that quickly. And which ones do you integrate? So I really learned a lot of strategic thinking there. And I really learned a lot about business partnerships. How do I, and I wasn't really good at that at the beginning. I'll own that too. When we acquire a company, I was always thinking, okay, we should go in and help this company to try to integrate with us, where it really became more about what's the right solution. What do they bring to the table? What do we have? And how do we merge that? And it took a while for me to really appreciate that at its depths. And how do we, because in the beginning, you're thinking, okay, well, you have this playbook and, we should follow the playbook. What you find over time is that playbook works 80% of the time, but the other 20% of the time, there could be a great system or a great group or a great process that you want to leverage in a different place. And one of the examples of that is the strategy we took there was we decided, let's integrate the data fast, and that gives us time to integrate the system slow. So we built a data lake way back in 2014, and we built data science capabilities, and it gave us the ability to get the insights across the enterprise without having to integrate all the systems right away. And had we done that, we would have probably undone a lot of those systems later, which would have been needless expense resourcing. So the, getting the data right was the real lesson I learned there. And it's paid
so
a
good.
Lot of dividends.
I love that. I love that, Pete, because I am sure I was in Dallas last month, I guess it was, and was meeting with a friend that they've done 22 acquisitions since 2020. That's a lot of acquisitions. That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's a big lift, right? But I love what you said. Figure out those things that you can do fast, which is getting the data, you know, building the data lake, but then so that you can integrate the systems or do what you need to do with the systems, because they may have a better system. They may have a better process over here, right? So I just think going in with that mindset was really smart.
Well, I think where we learned that too was when we thought through how might the business reform itself? What divisions might spin off? So what we did in those models is we were able to then only touch the systems when it made business sense. Mm-hmm. Not because we did an M&A, but because either these four divisions merged into one and then it made sense, or because something was end of life. We didn't have to knee-jerk react at every acquisition in that model. So it gave us the ability to move a lot faster at a lot lower costs.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. That is so good. Well, let me ask you, and I don't know if you can think of something like this or not. You've worked in lots of different brands here, lots of different sectors, which I love. But is there, like, if you can think back, was there one rookie mistake possibly, Pete, that you made that really taught you a lasting lesson?
Yeah, there are rookie mistakes, intermediate mistakes, senior mistakes, all kinds of mistakes. I think the one that I remember, and actually someone asked me this in a job interview several years ago. I think it might have even been when I came to Capan, is, you know, what was one of the things that you did early in your career that really set with you that you wish you could have undone? And I'll use the one from MasterCard. When I was at MasterCard, we were looking at putting in a project, and there were two competing technologies. And my leader at the time said to me, you know, you can go with this route and it's the safe route. It's really what MasterCard would probably prefer because it's more of a strategic partner. Or you can go the other route that you were suggesting, but you're on your own. And as a young leader, I caved and I went with the strategic solution, and it was wrong. And eventually we backed it out and we did something different. And looking back on that, what that really taught me is, it doesn't matter if it's the strategic solution or your solution or what's the right answer. That's what you stand behind. And and so that's really shaped my career. Of, you know, I look for what is the right outcome we're trying to achieve and what's the right technology to get there to support the business. And that's where I'll place my bets. And it really gave me, I guess, the confidence over the years to really stand up for those beliefs and not worry about, like, you know, there was an old saying at one time, I think somebody said, you know, you never get fired for picking IBM, right?
Yes.
Well, I've heard that recently, but I think the right answer is, what's the right solution for the problem? And how does it fit in the overall picture? And when you do that, you're going to sleep better at night. And even if you bring this forward and that product, platform, vendor, whatever isn't picked, you know you did the right thing.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. That is good, Pete. Well, let me ask you this, and then I'm going to dive more into leadership. I want to dive more into what you're doing at Campana. But have there been some mentors? Because I know that you are big on mentoring others, but were there some mentors along your leadership journey that really helped you and helped shape who you are in your leadership?
Yeah, there's two I'd love to call out. Joe Carroll really saw something in me when I was young. You know, I was a young, crazy technical leader, and he really helped me try to understand delivery, you know, what is the right outcome, and how do we achieve that in larger groups? And I think you know, I learned a lot from him. I worked with Joe in many companies. I think, you know, I've been with him. I think I was at MasterCard, I think Claris and at Post.
Claris and then Post.
Mm-hmm. We had a great relationship, and I felt very, you know, I guess the right word would be, and this will probably come up later in my career, but, you know, why I'm not still at Post, but very comfortable always working with him, you know, and as maybe call myself his right arm in some cases, where I knew we had this trust between us. And a lot of times it was unspoken. I knew what he was going to ask before he asked it, because we'd worked together so long in different environments and different functions in some cases, and also in different sectors, different, you know, business sectors. So we really learned a lot together. But I also learned a lot from him in the beginning, where I needed someone like that that had that trust in me and that saw my potential. And he did that. Mm-hmm. And he saw my potential and he helped to groom me. And I couldn't thank him enough. I probably need to call him again and thank him.
Well, you can send him this podcast and we'll do some shout outs to Joe. But, you know, I cannot tell you how many people I have interviewed and they will say there was this one person that saw something in me before I saw it myself. You know, and the thing that I always think about, we need to be doing that. And I know you do that naturally. We need to be doing that for other people. Right.
It's
and
paying
it forward. Right. But also paying it back and you know, calling those people out. So you did have another person. Who was the other person in your career?
The other person was Rob Vitale. So he's the CEO of Post Holdings. And I worked with him in many different areas over 10 years. And the thing that I learned about Rob really was his strategic thought was something that was very foreign to me in the beginning of why would he buy these companies that were so disjointed, and what is he thinking, and how does that play together? And he took the time in a lot of cases, and a lot of the trips were on, to explain the why, you know, and that is insight and wisdom really helped translate in my space on the technical side. How do I apply that here? How do I apply that same why? You know, does it, you know, in some cases, you know, does it make sense, you know, for integrating these four different divisions? How should we approach that differently in a decentralized model? And Rob really gave me the business acumen and insight to really think about those projects differently. And I did a project up in Minneapolis for a year. It was really rough because Malto Meal and Post Foods had merged. And I was the one person from the corporate company that they sent up to kind of lead that integration project. And I was there every week for a little over a year. It was and I ran into a lot of challenges. And I remember bouncing a lot of things off both Rob and Joe to get their different sets of perspective on how should I approach this problem? Because I'm really the one that is accountable overall for delivery with that team, but mm-hmm. I'm not there the long term. And I think that's hard for some of the folks that you're working with, where they know that, you know, you're part of the holdings organization. So it really gave I was able to take advantage of a lot of their wisdom to hopefully chart a better outcome. Mm-hmm. And really, I don't think I'd be the leader I am today. I don't think I would have gained the skills. I think I would definitely not have been able to grow and into focusing outward more without mm-hmm. their help.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, let's talk a little bit about Campana, and then we will take a quick break, and then we'll jump into, you know, a little bit more leadership. I want to talk to you about some ERP integrations and migrations, things that you've done. But tell us first, you're at Campana now. You are the VP of IT, CIO for Campana. Tell our listeners, Pete, real quickly, that may not know the Campana brand, tell us just a snippet about that, and then I have lots of questions about Campana.
Sure. Campana is it's a company that was really formed with multiple brands through acquisition. So there's, you know, over 20 brands over the time that they were bought and pulled together. And half our business is anything, it's more of a feed-based business. So I like to say it's anything from hamster to horse feed. It's really animals of all types on that spectrum. And then the other half of our business is really more focused on dog and cat nutrient supplements, treats, sprays, and even subscription boxes online. So like Bully Make is one of our larger e-commerce platforms, and we have have dynavite.com and doggydailies.com. And so we have a very interesting business where part of it is we manufacture product, part of it is we co-manufacture product and sell it to different partners, and part of it is an e-commerce direct-to-consumer channel. So it's a very interesting business model. It kind of takes together a lot of the experience I had at Post, which was basically consumer packaged goods. It just in more of a pet arena. But the company, I've been with them for about 2 years, and we've really made, when I was brought in here, it was really to kind of unify those brands, because they bought series of companies over a decade in time, but there really wasn't a lot of unification work. You know, there were three different IT teams 2 years ago. There was, I think we had six ERPs. We're down a few. We're still on that journey, but we had several other platforms that we've integrated, security overhauls, and really important was data. You know, like I mentioned before, how do we build a consistent enterprise view of data? So over the past 2 years, I spent a lot of time with our team. The first step was really unifying the IT team, getting us to work as one team together. And the team was great. I approached them all. And after I learned a little bit about them, I thought the best thing would be to give each of them an enterprise function. So they had something beyond their brand or beyond their region. And they did I'm so proud of them for how they adapted and grew with that. So they could run those enterprise functions as their own. And it kind of, you know, if you're in a region and it was like, well, this is where I came from, this allowed them, I think, a lifeline, or how do I grow into the next level? How do I have some growth in my journey? And it's really now you can do a lot of this work that you were either doing part-time, but you can do it as an enterprise function. So that was part of the secret sauce, I think, of getting the IT team here to really come together and unify as one group. We had shirts one Christmas that, you know, IT unified. So it was I felt like that was a great point in our evolution where the team came together very quickly and they serve Capana well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so glad that you are mentioning the team, because I know one of the first things that you did, Pete, I love the listening tour that you did. You talked to like over 75 people, some people in IT, some people not. And I just think that's always a really great way to start, right? Not come in with, I've got all the answers and I'm going to change this and this and this. I mean, you really started out by listening to people, understanding what their challenges were, right?
Yeah, my first 45 days were really, I think I had about 70 so meetings with, and I didn't come in with any preconceived notions. I wanted to come in with a blank sheet of paper because I don't want to presume I know something, or I want to really hear from the ground. I want to hear what's happening, what are the challenges, and I heard them, and it was really enlightening. It wasn't surprising because I'd been, you know, with a holdings company for 10 years, so I kind of thought I might hear some of this, but some of it was unique, some of it was, you know, repetitive. But what I did get was the facts, and that's really what I needed. Then I was able to put together, you know, a deck and a review for the board of we gave it to the exec team first and then our board and said, here are the things we're recommending to do over the next few years is our strategic roadmap. And that was literally formed from those discussions.
From the listening tour. Yeah, that is so good. That's so good. Well, let me ask you just two more questions. And then we do need to take a quick break. But, you know, sometimes, Pete, you know, IT in the past has sometimes just been seen as keeping the lights on, you know, but how do you position technology and the IT team to be what is considered a strategic partner? And it certainly is. My goodness. I mean, you guys, with what you're doing with, like you said, the B to consumer with e-commerce and selling directly. I mean, without IT, your business is not going to thrive or grow. But, you know, as a leader, how have you, you know, made sure that IT is being seen as a strategic partner and not just, you know, keeping the lights on?
So I'll share the example here at Capana, since it's fresh. It's similar approach, but I'll start with, I can't do that alone, right? Like, and I know that it sounds like I'm not trying to be overly humble, but I can't, because I don't want to be the face of IT. When I got here, a lot of folks felt like they couldn't go directly to the business partners or couldn't go directly to other peers. And I think it was just the culture that was there prior, because there were three different teams and they were very siloed. So I felt like, and I told a lot of folks this, my first 6 months, I felt like I was clipping zip ties. I felt like everyone had these zip ties around them and I had to clip their zip ties so they could fly free. And that's, I wanted all my directs to start working with their partners in expanding. So, and it takes a different look and feel by different IT function. So like, in data, it's a little easier because you're usually working with business functions to design visual analytics or different types of reporting. Or, you know, today it's more focused on, you know, Gen AI or some of the predictive models. But those are the kind of things that you can have, the team can engage with their business partners directly. So it's a little easier on the data side to get that face time to keep IT relevant because they're already having those conversations because there's a natural need. Where I think it's a little more challenging is like in security or infrastructure. So a couple examples there is on the security side, we were trying to integrate a single sign-on process from onboarding into IT. So I had our security lead actually working with the HR lead, and that's not always the way that would go, but giving them a business project, not a security project, but a business facing project where they could work directly with, you know, our security partner, I'm sorry, our HR partners. Mm-hmm. That went really well. Is, you know, there were some limitations in the technology, but just the fact they worked through them together built a relationship. On the infrastructure side, another example was we had four contact centers and we needed, you know, people were calling into literally four different models with four different systems. And so we integrated that into one, but I had my infrastructure lead took charge of that. He knew Microsoft Teams. I said, well, take point with this, work with the business function, get their requirements. And I, you know, on the back end, I would coach a little bit, you know, on things like how to handle maybe making sure we have the right requirements or enough depth. But he did a phenomenal job just pulling that together and then implementing it into one system where all the reps could then cross cover each other. Because instead of being three platforms, you're on one. But that traditionally might be a project that an application team would do. So I think it's getting the folks in different functions of IT, getting them involved in business projects where they might not naturally have been thought of that before. Because that's how I broke into the development side is I was given some opportunities to work on development projects where I was always seen before as kind of an infrastructure integrator. So until you get that opportunity and chance, I think it's hard. So it's hard to do it on your own. So I think it's giving people those options when those projects arise, where thinking a little outside the box of who else could do this project and maybe even do it in parallel so we can take more work on at the same time.
Yeah.
And then
the strategic piece of that, I mean, the examples that you just gave really showed the business immediately, the strategic partner that they have in technology. So that's awesome.
And it works really well too in other groups like Master Data, where data's always at need. Well, we've got some folks here on our master team that are wonderful, where they've figured out how do we automate this faster? How do we give the business an easier way to get their information in and creating data quality checks in that process? And you know, then they get to work with the business partners directly on those projects and get to communicate it and train on it. So I think it's staying in front of your business partners. And you know, now with Gen AI, across the board. I mean, it's whether you're talking about using it with Copilot or ChatGPT, or it's embedded in a product you're already using. We had just recently started an internal training program for the entire company. And we volunteered from the IT side to lead that because we know that what comes next from it will require IT support. So we should try to be the face of that, get the training, get everyone up to at least a base foundation level together. And that's underway right now. And that another way of showing like how are we trying to, you know, not just stay relevant, but actually kind of push forward.
Be strategic. Yeah. How is that going, by the way? Because I knew that you were doing that with the AI training, you know, of the whole team. How is it going? Are people resistant to change? Are they excited? A little bit of both, or
probably a little bit of both. I'd say that most folks have used these tools in some shape or form, but some have used them minimally. But I think the way this training is structured is the first half is really a little bit about how do you prompt wisely? How do you do smart prompt engineering. And that sounds silly, but it's kind of like if you didn't know how to use Excel, right? And you just started using, you'd figure it out. But if you took a 30-minute training course on key features, creating a pivot table, some basics in Excel, you'd get there a lot faster. And it would give you a lot more insight and maybe make you a little more curious. So the first part of the training covers that. The second part, we split it into 8 sections by business function. So each business function has use cases that are now tied to their role. So it'll help them think a little bit more, how do I use this technology as an assistant in my day job? Where can I spin things out to it? So I think that's the part that I think gets people a little more excited. So when they leave, they're like, they can relate a little more to it if they weren't as familiar with it. Because we, as every company, we have people all over the range of the spectrum. Some have been using it since it rolled out a few years ago, others, just barely. So yeah. I think this gave everyone at least a common foundation.
Well, I know that you're a certified AI, chief AI officer now, Pete. Yeah. So, but gosh, I've got so many more questions for you, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with my friend, Pete Hogan on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch-up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Pete Hogan. So, Pete, I want to just touch on this a little bit. You are kind of an ERP maven. You've done like 14 or 15 major integrations, migrations. You wrote something recently about the SAP cloud upgrade and how smoothly it went. And just for our technical people out there, I know you said from the time that you got the sandbox to go live was 3.5 months.
Yeah, that was correct. That
is almost unheard of. So what made this one so different? Because there might be some nuggets of gold in there that some of our listeners can learn from.
Sure. And the 14 or 15 I've done, I've been part of them. They at all varying levels. Early on, maybe leading them, in the more recent past, maybe being a part of the executive team. But yeah, it was a journey. So I think what was really different about the last one is, I'm going to call it a perfect storm in a good way. We at Capana, they'd moved from an on-prem model to a cloud model back in 2022. With a prior version. So they were already on S/4HANA Rise, which is the cloud-based version. So they were there. So I want to, frame it. This wasn't going from an on-prem, this was more of a cloud-to-cloud update. And that's what I thought was unique, because SAP has promised when you get to the cloud, it's much easier to upgrade. And, I've heard this for years and I've seen it in other companies. And, a lot of times it's just not true, right? But in this case, what happened is a few things. One, the upgrade utility they gave us to kind of run and tell us what we need to fix and change worked really well. So had we not listened and acted on its output, it would have been a horrible upgrade. Because I think the other thing is, not only did we get there in 3.5 months, we had no tier 1 or tier 2 issues. That's the amazing part. We had a lot of small stuff that you're going to see, but there was no business impact. And the best compliment I think our team got was, we didn't know what happened. That's amazing in an ERP upgrade. But the nuggets of wisdom, I think, were, first, we took the testing that was done prior in that upgrade a few years ago, and we added 25% more testing to it. We knew that there were some other things, there were some gaps, and there were some areas that needed to be vetted further. So between fixing the things that the upgrade utility told us to fix, and then doing this additional level of testing, because the one thing you control in every ERP upgrade or every system upgrade is how well you test. And the more you test, the more you find, and we found things. Mm-hmm. Had we not done that extra testing, we would have had SEV1, SEV2 issues at go live. Right. So it's not that they weren't there, we just caught them early. And I think that's the secret sauce here, is people skimp on testing sometimes. That's something that, I've learned over my career not to do. That's the area, if you want to minimize business impact, That's where you focus your time. You make sure you bring your experts in, you build extra scenarios, extra use cases. And as you test through that, you're going to find things and you fix them. And then you retest before you go live. And we still did that in a very fast time frame, but there were definitely issues found. They were just found early through testing. So the other part that I would say that was the perfect storm was SAP got it right. The upgrade worked as advertised. It worked really well. There wasn't any surprises. And we had a great partner in Hitachi. They did a phenomenal job as our go live partner, helping prep everything, you know, all the way from the configuration changes, you know, through testing and hypercare. And I had a wonderful internal team that ran this. They did a phenomenal job, you know, on the day-to-day, whether it's, you know, anything from the defect tracking to the corrective actions. And they were the core of the testing along with our business partners. The testing isn't done by IT, it's done by your business partners. And yes. Every business function engaged and helped. So, and we had a great project manager that made sure that all the I's were dotted and T's were crossed. So think if you're doing all those things, your probability for a really solid outcome is exponentially higher.
No, that's good. That's good. There's a lot of wisdom in there that hopefully some people can take away. We have another really good partner, don't you?
Of course.
Technology partners.
Technology partners. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's great. I want to give a shout out to Jake Gowers. Him and his team have done a great job. So we, you know, about a year and a half ago, we had built our data lake. We needed some help with data architecture, data engineering ongoing. And we decided at that point, did it make more sense to outsource it or to try to staff it internally? And we made the decision to outsource it with technology partners. And it was a great decision. You know, it's run incredibly smoothly since then. And we've actually, you know, it's been, there was one item that we were always trying to fix, which was how do we get some additional data faster from our CRM system and recover from if there's a hiccup in the overnight processing quicker. And the tool that you guys have built, Databasin, has been great in helping us solve both those problems. Right. So I want to give you a shout out.
I didn't mean to put a shameless plug in there, Pete, but I'm just thinking, yes, but you do have another good partner. So, so thank you. Thank you for that. I didn't even plan that, but thank you.
I would be remiss had I not said it.
Let's talk about leadership. So you have some philosophies where you say that, you know, you start one way, but then you end up moving more to a coach contributor. Tell me about that philosophy, because I think that might help some of our listeners on their own leadership journey.
Sure. So I think when you're a first-time manager, the thing that you struggle the most with, I think, is how do I let go? You're a player coach, but are you more player or more coach? And you sit in that role for several years, right? I mean, it takes a while to mature and to grow in that role. And eventually you get to the point where, and we talked about this a little earlier in the podcast of, you know, you're not going to be the best in all these areas. And eventually you're not even going to be the second or third best in all these areas. And you might be very unfamiliar with maybe one of the areas you inherit. But at that point, I think your role changes from being a player coach to a mentor contributor. Because your real role, your real value to the organization, I believe, is being the mentor to your team, helping them get past their challenges and coaching them. And you're still contributing. You're still finding either whether you're driving some of the newer technologies in Gen AI, whether you're helping one of our business functions and you're taking a little slice of a project and saying, hey, I can offload this from the team and help get this one off the ground so we can run some more things in parallel. But you're much more on the mentor side, coaching the team through their challenges and helping each of them, whatever their individual challenges are, evolve more than you are a contributor. And that's, I think, where, you know, I look to a lot of great leaders and I'm like, they've had to let go. And that's what I'm trying to emulate.
Mm-hmm. And it's not as easy as you think, right? I mean, it's not, that is sometimes where, you know, learning to work through other people and learning to mentor those people so that you can go further if you do that, Pete. But sometimes that sense of control or, you know, if I don't do it myself, it may not be done correctly. You got to let go of all that. You have to let go of that, all that, because it's going to, honestly, you're just going to go as far as you go if that's the way that you operate. So
100% agree. That's the hardest part is, I think, as people evolve to see. And that's where I think a lot of folks hit a ceiling and they can't get past that. And I think, you know, I was very fortunate that I had some really good mentors that helped me through those times. Said, well, we don't want you to stop here. There's a lot more we want to give you and put on your plate. Right. And that helped kind of me figure out that I couldn't do it all. And I think sometimes you have to go through a dark period almost where like you're overwhelmed. And like I was put in a few situations where there was no way I could do it on my own. I almost had, I did have to hand things off. And this was earlier in my career, but it taught me like I never want to be in that place again. And it really helped me form how do I delegate better and what do I need to do to delegate effectively so that if I hand something off, I'm not just handing it off. I'm handing it off with enough information, enough instruction, enough coaching that it'll get done successfully. And it might not get done the way I would have done it. And that's okay.
That's okay. Because
if the outcome's good and the outcome, and even in some case when the outcome isn't good, then it's a learning moment. And then that's how we all grow.
Yeah. So Pete, I want to touch on this just a little bit because I think it's really important. You are so involved in the community. Lots of things that you do, right? So you're leading this IT organization. You've got 4 kids. You've got a wife. You got a lot going on, but you have invested a lot in the community. I mean, you are on the strategy board for Missouri S&T. You're very involved in HMG. Shout out, your episode is going to be playing the day of the 11th annual HMG. You've been involved in that for many, many years. You're involved in the Inspire CIO group here. Another little plug for you, Pete. You were the 2024 Enterprise CIO of the Year. You won an Orby. So proud of you. I was sitting there so proud to see your name up there. But, you've given back a lot. Why is it important? Because sometimes, and especially in IT leaders, sometimes think, that's not as important, to be involved in the community. But why do you believe it is important for us as corporate leaders to be involved in the community? And then my second question is a follow-on to that. What are the lessons that you've learned from doing that? Because, I mean, you're serving, but you're also, that's not why you do it, but you also get a lot back. In fact, you get more back sometimes than what you feel like you're giving.
I think the easy answer is, I feel when you've had, I've been put in a point where I feel very blessed. And I feel like I'm at this point in my career where I have to give back. I don't even really think that it's an option. I've felt this way my entire career. I mean, you've named a lot of the things that I've done, more on the professional side, because I think I've been given so much by so many good mentors. I have had great mentors. I've had good mentors. I've had a lot more than I could name in this. I just named the top two that I had the longest relationship with. But I feel like if I can give some of that back too, that's how I can help build that next generation, whether it's within Capana or, within some of the other organizations we're a part of. The S&T organization's great on the BIT board, because I feel like that keeps me helping, that keeps me relevant in understanding what's happening in the academic world and maybe where we can help with better, putting together better classes, better curriculum. So we're helping prepare people coming into the workforce better. And I have 4 children. So, I mean, I care a lot about that. I care about, how are other people helping them do something similar. Yeah. And then the things that matter most to me now are things like the CARE service and, where we're helping people avoid homelessness. I mean, it's an organization that I believe really, really hugely in, because they try to find folks that and help them before they become homeless. And then whether it's paying a few electric bills and a few months rent, they keep them in their current residence. And it's a lot easier to do that than it is to help someone once they've become homeless. It used to be more about transitional housing. Now it's more about affordable housing. So those are the kind of things that, we've been all given so much. It's like, I just don't think there's an option not to help. I wish I had a better answer, but I really don't.
Well, Pete, there's There is a verse out there that says, to whom much is given, much is required. To whom much is given, much is required. And Greg and I feel exactly the same way. We've been given so much, you know, but with that comes a responsibility to give back. And so, yeah. So I'm grateful for you. I mean, you make St. Louis better because you, and our region better because you are giving back. And so for any leaders or listeners out there that aren't serving in some way, find something. I always say, find something. First of all, find what you're passionate about. Yes. And like you just said, I'm passionate about the next generation of tech leaders. I'm also passionate about people having their basic needs met, like homeless, you know, having a shelter over their heads. Find out what you are passionate about and then just go do something. Absolutely. And I'm telling you, if all of us that can will, wow, just think of how much better our world would be, Pete.
And you don't have to start in something that is overwhelming. I mean, you can just start as a volunteer and going to help for a day to understand more what an organization's like. You don't have to start by jumping on a board or you know, committing an inordinate amount of time. You could just look around, you know, almost like you said, I love what you said, Lisa, of, you know, find what you're passionate about. And then maybe there's five or six organizations, then go and look at what that commitment is to each of them and how you could help best. And then what do you feel calling you? And then that'll help drive your decision. But I agree. I mean, it's something that if everyone would just do a little, can you imagine?
Yeah. Much better world we would be living in, for sure. Oh my goodness, I've got so much other stuff. I want to talk to you about how you personally unplug. How do you recharge? I know you and Liz, you know, love doing stuff together. I think don't you like roast coffee beans or something like that? Did I like dream that, or did you tell me that one time?
So I've been doing that for about 10 years. As a matter of fact, this weekend's a roasting weekend. So I don't do it as much as I used to, but I roast coffee as a hobby. I think I do it about three or four times a year now, but I'll do bigger batches, so I do it less often. But I built many coffee contraptions. some of them I have pictures of. They're embarrassing, but they're funny to see now. But the one I ended up with was just really a gas grill I retrofitted with almost like a spit that you would put a roast on with a different kind of motor. And I can roast about 8-9 pounds of coffee an hour on that. And I have an electric roaster I bought, and I do the two side by side, and I can produce quite a bit of coffee in an hour.
Uh-huh. Well, you do have an electrical engineering degree. Oh, that is so funny. No, I was thinking about you, and I'm thinking now, I think Pete told me that he roasts coffee beans. I know he's a big barbecue guy. You got all kinds of things that you do, but let's talk about something extra. Sure. So the through line through every podcast is, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs? But then I'm going to ask you another question on top of that one. Pete, what do you believe your something extra has been that has helped you be successful? So I want you to tell me, what do you believe is the something extra every leader needs? And then you have lots of gifts, but what do you believe yours are?
Well, I think the something extra, I think every leader that I've admired had was empowering their teams, you know, and figuring out on an individual level, what are their growth needs? You know, it could be anything from, they need help from managing internal partners because they're an introvert, or doing presentations because they're shy in front of large groups, to managing difficult vendors when we're not getting an outcome, or leading challenging employees, or even just contract negotiations. That's new to a lot of folks. But empowering their team to take those next things on. And I think that's what we talked about earlier, of how do you step back and let others grow so you can really enable the business to its fullest from an IT perspective. You've got to empower the team. So I think, you know, that's the leadership attribute I look to, you know, to great leaders. I try to emulate it. That's you know, I always tell people, when you see a quality you like in a leader, ingest it and digest it, and then try to make it your own, because it's going to look different through you. But if that quality is noble and honorable, and that's what you want, that's what you're seeking, then try to find a way to emulate it through your own style.
That's good.
I guess, you know, I think, you know, I'm usually talking about the things I'm not as good at. So I'd like to think I've learned to empower my team over mm-hmm. the years. I like to think that because I value that so much, that's an area I've put a lot of focus in.
I think you've got extraordinary care for people too, Pete. I think you truly care about people. You care about their desires. I mean, empowering them, but then if you back it up, it's because you care so much. You want them to be the best version of them, right? You want to see them win in their career and in their life. And so I think that's one of yours too. I think you really, truly care about the individual, not just what they can do for the organization, but who they are. So
yeah, I appreciate you saying that. It's funny because I grew up in a culture where the outcome was the most important, you know, in my early days of technology and early days of leadership. So that's actually, I appreciate you saying that because I feel that. I honestly spend a lot of time with each of my team members trying to figure out how can I help them specifically? Where do they need the help? But I also feel like I don't show it as well as I should. You know, I don't feel like I'm always as show empathy to the level I should. And I think that's just, maybe it's just because of how I grew up as a leader. But so I appreciate you saying that because that's the part that I honestly feel like I still struggle with today.
Yeah, I think they see it though. I think they see it. When they see you investing in them, the root of that is because you care. You care about them as a person. So my friend, thank you so much. I know how busy you are, Pete. And so I just appreciate you so much, like making the time to be on the show today. And I know that your wisdom's going to help our listeners.
Lisa, thank you for everything. Thank you for all the partnership over the years, the help, your wisdom, and for doing this podcast. I mean, I can't tell you how much wisdom I and several others have just got listening to them, and just the wonderful leaders you've been able to interview over the years. It's amazing. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.